Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'm delighted now to welcome novelist Michael McGarrity. His latest book is called Death Song, and he will be speaking at Garcia Street Books tomorrow, Saturday, January 5th, at 3 in the afternoon. Welcome.
Great to be back. I've got to tell you that I absolutely love your name, and I keep trying to think of a way that I can borrow it for one of my characters. You have a great name.
Well, thank you. Gosh, just don't make her a murderer.
Well, I mean, that's my option.
Could ruin my reputation.
Or enhance it.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I mean, this is something I wanted to ask you about. This is your 11th book.
That's right.
And in it, there are 5 murders, 6 if you count the unborn child of one of the murder victims. Where does this desire to write about death and murder come from in you?
Well, I don't know whether it's a desire as much as it is a process of looking at what the human being is capable of doing in terms of good, but to a greater extent evil. And being kind of an agnostic by nature, I mean, death is an inevitability, whether it's done under an apple tree when you fall asleep, like a dear old friend of mine did at a very old age, or whether you're brutally murdered and have your life taken away from you tragically and savagely. So death is part of the human experience, and it's part of what we have to deal with emotionally and socially and psychologically and philosophically. And, you know, in this country, we really do a damn poor job of it.
I wondered whether, I love reading mysteries, and I love reading your mysteries. How much like real life are the crimes in your book?
As you know, I have a police background, and so I have to draw on that. So I draw on real experience that I had in law enforcement, and I draw on other law enforcement officers' experiences and knowledge. I still have connections in law enforcement, and I use those. So a lot of it is reality-based. I'm not the kind of writer that can create whole cloth concepts out of my imagination like a Ray Bradbury can or Stephen Crane did in some of his works, Red Badge of Courage, for example. And then some of it is based on fictional characters and situations and contrivances that I create.
But, I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is... it seems like the policing part of it and the equipment part of it and the characters are very realistic, but the nature of these crimes that take an entire book to solve and that have these and those kinds of motivations seems more literary to me.
Well, I appreciate that because if you're going to tell a good story, you've got to be able to do it in such a way that captures the imagination of the reader. There's a lot of reality to police work that if you tried to put it into a book would be incredibly boring. And you'd be writing a book the length of War and Peace if you wanted to really create the basic reality of what comprises an investigation from beginning to end, from the time of the crime to the time of, if you will, conviction and incarceration. So there has to be a pacing and there has to be a momentum. And things have to be moved along in a way that is compatible with good storytelling.
Yeah, I would think that a lot of policing is waiting around and having nothing happen.
That's the old cliche about police work is 80% boredom and 20% an adrenaline rush. And that can be very true. I mean, being out on patrol... you can have a horrifically busy, incredibly interesting day followed by 2 or 3 days of just nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing happening. You know?
And nothing is a blessing, in a sense, and having an exciting life is not.
Well, it's a lot more interesting, I think, if you're on the streets, if you're dealing with meaningful situations. I don't know a seasoned officer who wouldn't who wouldn't want it that way? It's not necessarily that they want to place themselves at risk or be in, a high-intensity situation. But if the work is more interesting, more moving towards the goal of catching the bad guys and locking them up, that's where the real reward comes from.
One thing that I was struck by in this book is the extent to which solving the crime was based on forensic technologies and on the access to other case files from other crimes, some of them very old case files, cold case files, as they say, and some of them in different countries and so on. I mean, you wonder how a crime was solved at all 50 years ago.
Well, there have been these marvelous advances that you know of. I mean, that have been portrayed on television now for a number of years. And with the new technology, with the new methodology, with the kind of the world network that you have between law enforcement agencies all over the globe, information sharing is a lot better, and the quality of information that you get is a lot better, and how you use it is expedited by all of that. So crimes continue to get solved at a more rapid pace, if you will, with a larger reach over time and over distance than they have in the past. And that's kind of an exciting thing about modern law enforcement, that capacity is there.
And not only access to other files. I mean, they in this book, it's a little hard to talk about a novel because you don't want to give away too much of it, but there's cases overseas, and they reach somebody almost immediately once they figure out the relationship between the New Mexico case and this other. But there's also not only DNA technologies, but the ability to trace. I mean, even the shadow of a smudge of a fingerprint. And a lot of evidence technologies as well.
There's a lot of evidence technology, but if you read the book carefully, if you read Death Song carefully, you'll find out that a lot of the hard work they do about gathering evidence really doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a lot of evidence that you gather as a consequence of trying to be incredibly thorough that winds up being meaningless in terms of whether it has an impact on solving the case or not. And that's one of the things that I enjoy doing in my writing, is showing that not everything that you do forensically or in terms of crime scene analysis has a payoff. A lot of it doesn't have a payoff, but still you have to go through that process. You have to go out and find anything that comes close to being evidence and then analyze it to see whether it's worthwhile.
There's a part where one of the policemen says a lot of the case is built after the person is arrested. Is that true?
It's absolutely. It's a fact. It totally is a fact. You just need probable cause legally to arrest somebody. Probable cause is not sufficient evidence to convict. It's only a reasonable belief that the person has committed that particular crime. So the hard work comes after arrest, 85-90% of the time. What I like about this book particularly is the fact that I bring so many agencies together and so many personnel together and sort of have a task force thing happening. And it was kind of fun to put that on the page and let people see what it really is like when agencies join forces to try to work on a major felony case.
Well, what is that like? I mean, in New Mexico, you have sheriff's departments in different counties. You've got the state police, and you've got the local police departments. And in this, the crimes that happen at the very beginning are murders in two different counties.
Right.
How does that work? I mean, does everybody work it out each time, or there?
Yeah, usually, unless it's a standing task force, which is what you have sometimes in narcotic jurisdictions, where you have agents working across different county lines and boundaries. But special task forces tend to work that way, where, this encompasses a geographical area, encompasses more than one jurisdiction. Let's pull people together and work on it from every end, every angle.
And in some cases, you have to work around, for example, there's a sheriff who isn't really the brightest light on the Christmas tree.
That's right. And that's reality. I mean, law enforcement profession is like any other profession. You have your stars. You have people who are more than competent, who are really gifted and capable at what they do, and then you have your bureaucrats who are not necessarily the hottest hot shots out there in the world, but are maybe good at managing at institutions and agencies, and you've got some people who are just flat out dunderheads. Put them all in the book.
We're talking to Michael McGarrity, and his new book is called Death Song. He's going to be speaking tomorrow in Santa Fe at Garcia Street Books at 3 in the afternoon. Well, it's certainly fun to read it as a New Mexican. It's very New Mexican. You recognize not only the characters and the places, but even the names. I mean, the names of one of your characters is the same as my neighbor. And I sort of wonder how do you keep from getting too close to reality?
Well, names, nobody owns names, right? So there's no copyright on a name. And I like using names that are reflective of the community. I mean, the names that you're going to use, for example, or I'm going to use, for example, in from northern New Mexico or the Santa Fe area are going to be a lot different than the names I'm going to use from Lincoln County.
Right.
Or from the Boot Heel. Or from northeastern New Mexico. And so I like to even research names to find out what are the good names that are out there in all of these little areas. And when I go on my research trips, one of the things I try to pick up is a little telephone directory so I can page through it and see what the common names are, what the more than ordinary names are in that community or in that area. And then I use them. That's why I want to use your name, because it's so great.
And so local. Well, as a New Mexican, recognizing the local flavor of your books is very gratifying. Does every state have its local mystery writer? Vermont, does Idaho and Vermont and Florida have its Michael McGarrity?
Yeah, I think quite a few areas have regional authors. That are popular, and a couple of the states that you mentioned, like Montana and Vermont and Florida, there are writers that are regional, but there are also writers that live in those areas that are national writers. I mean, their appeal has sort of expanded, and that's kind of the category I'm in right now, is the last five or six books have all been national bestsellers.
Right.
And so as I started out, I was, appealing to a regional audience, the Southwest, and especially New Mexicans. But that's grown as awareness of the series has grown and books have sold. So I have become more nationally known.
You mentioned that you worked in law enforcement. You worked as a sheriff's deputy. You taught in the law enforcement academy.
Yes.
And you were an investigator for the public defender. Now you've been a writer for quite a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you keep up with what's happening in police work so that your novels aren't dated?
Well, we kind of touched on that earlier. But once you've entered the brotherhood, if you will, once you've been a certified officer, you served as a policeman, it kind of gives you a carte blanche into the community. You have to remember that a lot of prosecutors, judges, and police officers and police administrators are great mystery fans. They love a good mystery. And I've had experiences where I've knocked cold on the door at a major sheriff's department in California or down at Lincoln County and announced myself and said, I'd like to talk to somebody because I'm researching a book and my name is Michael McGarrity. Have people come out of the back offices and say, I love your books. Come on back. Let's talk. Tell me, what can I do to help you? What do you need to know? So I have those kind of connections still with both retired and serving officers, and it cuts across local, state, county, even national jurisdictions.
So Kevin Kearney is in this book. He's mm-hmm. somebody I remember from your last book, Nothing But Trouble. Are most of the characters at this point people who we've met in your 10 other novels?
I have what I call a ensemble cast, if
right.
you will.
And I was thinking about that because if you made the movie of it, it really would be an ensemble cast.
Yeah, it's an ensemble cast, and characters come and characters go. So I may, like in the book that I'm working on now, the next book, I'm halfway through it, and I bring a character back for one scene that I don't think has been around for like six books. And he's only back for one scene, but why not bring him back, For those people who have become acquainted with this kind of life story of Kearney and all his surrounding characters and family and friends and co-workers, that's going to be, I think, a sweet little touch. Oh, yeah, I remember him. Look what he's doing now. So I've got this ensemble cast that makes life very interesting for me as a writer because they can all grow and develop and change and come and go. And I kill a few off every now and then and introduce a few more. And it's just great fun.
Now, your books are always set in whatever the present tense is that you're writing them in.
Right.
And so these characters are growing up and getting older
Exactly. Each
book. And so Kevin Kearney is about to retire.
Well, yeah, and people are worried about that.
Yeah,
right?
I'm worried.
Here's this, he's the number one guy in the series. You know, he's why I created the series. And what's this going to mean? Does this mean he vanishes and disappears from sight? But, you know, look at it like one of those serials that you used to see in the Saturday matinee, right? Where you'd go and you'd see episode one and you'd go back next week and see episode two. So more to come, you know. I'm not going to give it all away, but I will say that Kearney is one of these really top-flight professionals, and don't you think that even if he's retired, people would want to make use of his skills occasionally?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, you think maybe?
Yeah. We're talking to Michael McGarrity. One of the characters is a Mescalero Apache man. He's one of the policemen who believes that in the days after a person's death, their ghost is around and that people are in danger of getting affected by that ghost, getting sick from that ghost, and he wears black to protect himself. Is that a real Apache belief?
Well, it's a Mescalero Beach belief. You know, you have when you talk about the Apaches, you have to be very careful because there are a number of different tribes, and although they're similar in many ways, they have their own traditions and their own beliefs and their own issues that they really covet and keep very close to themselves. The interesting thing about trying to research Mescalero Apaches is that in many ways they're very closed, and there's not a lot of really good research out there about them.
The anthropologists haven't opened those circles.
Some have been opened, but not fully and not completely, and I doubt that they ever will be. When I write about this character, Clayton's cultural beliefs, religious beliefs, traditional values, they're all accurate and real. But he's a character that lives in the real world, in the modern world. You know, he's as capable of functioning outside of the res as anybody who lives outside of the res functions. So the idea of him as a character is that he brings his culture with him and his tradition with him and his Apache-ness, if you will, with him, but he's fully formed in the real world. He's not a stereotype.
Right.
And I don't pretend to be an expert about the Mescalero Apache, so when I write about things, I tend to err on the side of caution and do some really good research before I even begin to suggest that I want to say something that has a cultural value to it.
Well, there's a little bit of humor in that for me because the Clayton's wife at a certain point gets a secret out of one of the policemen by saying that something is a Mescalero Apache belief and therefore she needs to know this.
Right.
And of course it's complete nonsense. She's just made it up to get what she wanted.
Yeah, yeah. And it works. You know, it works brilliantly. I mean, she basically doesn't fib, but just says something that makes so much sense to this Anglo that she's telling it to, that, of course, he reveals the information because it fits neatly into his value system in terms of what he would want to do, where it's totally opposite to what the Mescalero would traditionally do.
We're talking to Michael McGarrity. What is the meaning of the title Death Song?
Well,
without giving it away too much.
I really think that's almost impossible to answer outside of the context of reading the book.
Okay.
Okay?
So, let's see. One thing I did want to make sure that we talk about is part of the profits from the sales of this book at Garcia Street Books will go to the Hillerman McGarrity Scholarship Fund. Tell us about that.
Well, The idea to set up a fund in Tony's name was mine. It was about 3 years ago, and I approached Dan Hillerman at the Hillerman Conference. I said, we really ought to do this to honor Tony and all that he's done. Tony thought about it and called me on the phone. He said, no, I want it to be in both of our names. And I want it to be at the College of Santa Fe because at different times we both taught there. And so I was totally honored that Tony would want to set up the scholarship and have me be a part of it. So we set up the scholarship actually 20 months ago. It was in like April of 2006. And made some donations and asked some friends and fans and family to make donations and got a little committee going. And in 20 months, we've raised over $95,000 for the scholarship. We've already awarded two scholarships. We're going to award two more in March. Our goal is to raise $110,000. That'll be fully endowed. I think we're going to reach that goal this year. The people at Garcia Street, Edward and Ava Borens, have graciously agreed to donate 10% of the profits of the sale of the new book, Death Song, to the scholarship funds. They've been contributors to the fund almost since the beginning. I think we're going to break $96,000 from this effort on their part. We had a great garden party in September, and we raised almost $8,000 at Forrest and Peggy's Fenn's house for the scholarship. We're going to have another event in March when we announce the two new students who are going to receive scholarships this year. It's been a lot of fun, and the great thing about it, Mary Charlotte, is this has an added benefit of really accentuating the literary community in Santa Fe, and we want to make this an annual event. At the garden party, we had Hampton Sighs, we had Wes Studi, we had Sarah Lovett, we had Tony there, Tony and Marie was there. We had renowned artists come. We had a guy from U.S. World and News Report visit from out of state. It was wonderful. And so what we want to do is not only continue to support literary arts at the College of Santa Fe, but accentuate literary arts in Santa Fe itself generally and make it more and more of something that people are aware of that's beyond the Lannan Foundation and all these other little festivals that go on and is of and for and by Santa Feans who love books and love literature and want to support it.
And who gets these scholarships?
They're students in the College of Santa Fe Creative Writing Program. And the scholarships are awarded based on merit selected by the faculty. The only two provisos that we asked them to consider, Tony and I did, was that they have financial need and priority be given to New Mexico residents.
So we're just about out of time. I wanted to ask you before we go, as a mystery writer, as an ex-policeman, ex-law enforcement person, what do you think is or are the worst crime problems that we are facing in New Mexico?
We continue to have an outlandishly high domestic violence and rape rate in the state. And even though resources have been provided to deal with it, a lot of it is after the fact kind of resources, like rape crisis centers and domestic abuse centers and counseling programs and services for inmates when they're incarcerated to help them deal with anger management or rage. What we don't have are some of the preventative programs that we need to get people to rethink how they interact, how men deal with and interact with women is a real important issue. And in our society, which unfortunately has this history of macho BS, supposedly a value system, it's harder than hell to eradicate that. So domestic violence is a serious issue. Sex crimes against women and children is a serious issue, and crimes of violence, also drug abuse. A lot of things flow from drug abuse, flow from alcoholism and cocaine addiction and crack addiction and heroin addiction and all of that. So breaking it down to three areas, drug abuse, drug addiction, sex crimes, and domestic violence are three things that really need much more attention across the whole spectrum, from prevention to intervention to criminal justice to incarceration and treatment for inmates.
Are you, in your next novel, are you dealing specifically with those areas?
No. In a way, I am. I mean, yeah, as I think about it.
I mean, the drug
quickly,
thing comes up everywhere.
Yeah, but as I think about it quickly, yeah, to a certain extent I am. But in my next book, I am dealing with probably the baddest bad guy that I've ever put on paper. And, you know, I'm really having a lot of fun with that.
Well, on that note, Michael McGarrity, it's wonderful to have you back here, and we look forward to seeing you again when your next book comes out.
It's a delightful, delightful experience to spend a morning with you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Michael McGarrity's latest book is called Death Song, and he will be speaking at Garcia Street Books tomorrow, Saturday, January 5th, at 3 in the afternoon. We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with Robert Knott. Speaking of the arts, stay tuned.
Where is he?
I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo Friday Art Supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he's here with us today, as he is just about every Friday, speaking of the arts. Welcome, Robert Knott.
May old acquaintance be forgot, but never Mary Charlotte. How are you?
That's so 4 days ago.
Well, I don't care. It's a new year. What'd you do for the New Year's weekend?
The New Year's weekend?
You know, like the whole stuff we had, like New Year's Day.
Well, I went through my house and threw out, or got rid of, a whole lot of books.
What kind of books?
Books that I know I'm never going to read again. I did away with my entire self-help shelf.
Self-help shelf, huh? Did it help?
Oh, Robert. Yes, I think it did.
Well, we'll see as the new year progresses. We'll start this week with, you know, a lot of love and peace between us. And no antics, no shtick. Let's just get down to business.
No antics, no shtick. That's our motto.
That's it for the new year.
Don't believe a word of it, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I'm going to try. That's one of my resolutions. Here we go. If you pick up Pasatiempo today, we want to warn you, brace you, hope you like it, and understand if you don't. We looked back at 25 years ago when we think Pasatiempo started, the tail end of 82, early 83, and the cover is actually a prototype of an ad that was created for the Pasatiempo back in 1983. So it looks like, as somebody noted, one of our clever copy editors, almost like an ad for an escort service, and I know about them very well because I used to work in an ad department. But anyway, so what we did is we had like 15 pages devoted to stories from 1983. We hope, especially for old-timers, that it appeals to. There's some interesting pieces in there on people like R.C. Gorman, Edward James Olmos, and Brent Cleaver, who had just come to town to open up a cinema called Collective Fantasy, Denise Chavez. It's really interesting to see these people. And we even included a few ads, like one for Club West, and there's also one for Woody Allen lookalike contest that took place at the Santa Fe Playhouse in the early 80s. We realized in looking at that ad yesterday that the same phone number exists, but don't call the Playhouse thinking there's a Woody Allen contest. That was back 25 years ago. So we hope you enjoy it. Read it. Enjoy. Laugh. The Playhouse, incidentally, has expanded the murder mystery, The Mousetrap, which is running through this weekend.
Yes.
142 east of Argus Street, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and 988-4262. And I'm going to go see it on Sunday closing day.
Oh, good.
I did not have to review it, so it was not something I saw. So anyway, that's the beginning of this. You had on, for those that just tuned in, Michael McGarrity, who's having a book signing of his new book at 3 o'clock tomorrow at
Garcia Street Books in Santa Fe.
And it's called Death Song.
Yep, it's great.
Yeah, and you read it, and I didn't, so I believe you. But there's that great theme song that goes with it. You know, Death Song, there's nothing like Death Song. I love that Death Song, obviously. That goes with Star Wars, which sort of fits in with our 25th. We also have an expanded and new calendar listings compiled by the wonderful Rob DeWalt. Get used to it. Just readjust your eyes. It's okay. You'll make your way through it. And I'm gonna spin through it this morning and try to give you some tips on things that are happening in an otherwise quiet time of year.
It's a very quiet time of year.
It certainly is. It's so quiet, I'm home watching silent movies. Here we go. Fourth Friday is today. That's January. There's only three gallery openings. Manitow Galleries, 123 West Palace Avenue, has a calendar art show, which is work featured in their 2008 calendar. So I assume they have 12 different artists that make 12 different images, don't you?
I have no idea. I would say that is a reasonable hypothesis.
Because it's a calendar?
Yeah.
What kind of calendar do you have here on your wall?
I have a Jack Russell Terrier calendar in one room, and I've got a Dachshund calendar in the other room.
You don't have, like, the Beefcake Boys of Biloxi?
Not unless you count those beautiful Dachshunds.
I see. Uh-huh. Anyway, the reception for this year calendar art show is from 5 to 7:30 p.m. tonight. The show runs through January 17th.
I didn't want one dog to think that the other dog was being favored, so I bought both calendars.
That's excellent.
That's
it. Santa Fe Clay, 1615 Paseo de Peralta, and the Rayard is having the Seven Deadly Sins. That's a group show of ceramics, reception 5 to 7 p.m., 984-1122. The show runs through February 2nd. Can you, off the top of your head, name the Seven Deadly Sins?
No.
Okay, neither can I. Can you name the Seven Dwarfs?
Even less so.
It's amazing. They're always strange how they have numbers. You ever notice that? There's like Ten Commandments, Seven Deadly Sins, Three Stooges. There's never like, what's two or four? There's four horsemen of the Apoc. They're always bad, and except for the Three Stooges, they're all sort of bad and violent. Actually, the Three Stooges are violent.
The Three Stooges are very violent. I don't know why you love them so much. I cannot understand it.
But there's no nines or eight, is there? Oh, I guess there's the eight wonders of the world.
That's true.
You must be one of them. And nine, what? Nine, we'll find something for nine. And anyway.
Let's see.
I got one more art gallery opening for today.
Lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride.
One more time.
Okay. Lust.
Guilty. Keep going.
Gluttony.
Yes, okay, that's two.
Greed.
Well, come on, eventually I'll square it. That's three. Go ahead.
Sloth.
What's that mean?
Laziness.
Okay.
In terms of vocabulary building.
I see, that's four I'm guilty of. Keep going.
Wrath.
What's that?
Anger.
No, I don't think so. Good, I'm off one.
Envy?
That means I'm sort of jealous of what you have and I don't have it?
Yeah.
Well, you got it, girl, and I'm jealous, so that's five.
What are you jealous
keep
of?
Going.
And pride.
What does that mean, being proud?
Well, it's pride in a negative sense. I mean, there's good pride and there's bad pride.
So I'm half guilty of that one, and I'm not guilty of wrath, so that, and a score of seven,
You've only got five and a half.
Is that good or bad, though, under the circumstances?
I don't know. You'd have to go to a Catholic priest who doesn't have any of those sins and see what they say. Of course, there is no such person.
That's five and a half out of seven, but that's not good when you look at it backwards like this. I'd rather do the Seven Dwarfs: sleepy, grumpy, doc, dopey, bashful. All right, sleepy.
Happy.
Sleepy, happy, grumpy. Dopey. There's four with Y's.
Bashful.
Doc.
And Ralphie.
No, it's not Ralphie. Sleepy, bashful, Doc.
Dopey. This is we're speaking of the arts here on KSFR 90.7 and 101.1.
Tonight, Cafe Dominic, Jerry Carthy, Irish Music, 6 to 9 p.m. Remember we discussed this the other day? Oh, Danny boy.
Oh, yeah.
The pipes are blowing. He's there tonight. I don't think he's going to play that song. Now he probably feels like he has to. Cafe Dominic on Guadalupe Street. No cover. Chispa de Mason is the three faces of jazz. There you go with the numbers again. 8 to 11 o'clock. No cover. Three of them. That doesn't mean they'll be poking each other in the eyes, I hope. Cowgirl Bar and Grill has Hello Operator. Indie Rock, 7 o'clock. No cover. Followed by the Santa Fe All-Stars doing Americana at 9 with a slight cover charge. Meanwhile, over at Dinner for Two on Guadalupe Street, Pablo Champion does the Theorbo. Do you know what that is?
The what?
The Theorbo, T-H-E-O-R-B-O. Well, it's some sort of instrument. You ought to come up with that one off the top of your fingertips. 7 to 9 p.m., no cover. John Gooch at the piano at the El Dorado Hotel and Spa, 5:30. We have a funny photo of John Gooch. I'm not suggesting the photo's funny, and I'm not suggesting John was funny in 1983 in our retro issue today when she was playing at the Sheraton. Meanwhile, the Jimmy Stadler Band's doing rock down at La Fiesta Lounge at La Fonda, 8 o'clock. And meanwhile, at the Mineshaft Tavern down in Madrid, Ken Valdez and Michael Kott doing acoustic rock, 7 o'clock. No cover charge. And finally, I got to mention Tiny's tonight, 5:30. Don Lovato and Chris Abeta on guitar, but then later we have Prieto de Salsa. You know all about
Salsa,
that.
Salsa, Prieto y Parranda.
Sí.
Where?
Esta noche en Tiny's a la 8:30 p.m., no cover. I was dreaming in Spanish last night, by the way. That's
oh, really?
Scary.
What'd you dream? I'm afraid to ask.
I don't know. I'm starting to put my dreams all together. Two nights ago, I dreamt that Brent Cleaver's dachshund was kidnapped by Anne Margaret.
He has a dachshund?
Yes.
Oh, that's so sweet.
But I don't know why Anne Margaret would take it. I wish she'd take me. Scottish Country Dance tonight, 7:30 p.m., Odd Fellows Hall, 1125 Sewer Road. You got to pay to get in. It ain't too much. And they give you a lesson. So that's a lot of stuff happening on Friday, despite the fact that it's a quiet time of the year.
Hey, did you announce what's happening at the Santa Fe Art Institute on Monday?
We haven't gotten to Monday yet, but go ahead, jump this. What do you call it when you jump the, you know?
The gun?
Yeah, there you go. Jump it.
We've just been talking to Michael McGarity, so gun imagery is appropriate. On Monday, January 7th at 6 o'clock at Tipton Hall on the campus of the College of Santa Fe, New Mexico Book Award winner Fernando Garavito will lecture as the conclusion to the Santa Fe Art Institute's 2007 Comfort Zone season of visiting artists with the theme of artists as activists.
Very nice, 6 o'clock. Very cheap to get in. Whenever I say that, it means that there's dollars less than a number of fingers on one hand, because you can't mention dollars on your wonderful community radio station, KSFR.
But you kind of did in your little backward way there.
I just simply said it was less than $5. All right. Meanwhile, what's going to happen at the First National Bank of Santa Fe in El Dorado? Well, hopefully not a bank robbery or they'll finger me. Nonetheless, on Sunday, photographs by Sheila Bicoli, reception 3 to 5 p.m. If you're out in Santa Fe, pardon me, El Dorado. This particular branch of the First National Bank, which always has art on the walls, is 13 Avenida Vista Grande. So head on out there if you want on a Sunday at 3 to see these images. Oddly enough, that same day, Eliza Schmidt has Secret Doors and Magic Letters. Ooh, that's a show at noon, a reception at noon on Sunday at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Santa Fe over here on Barcelona Road. The show runs through January. How are we doing for time?
It's 8:45.
Oh, good. I have time to sing Danny Boy later.
Oh, boy. Danny Boy, I meant.
Meanwhile, tomorrow at Angelina's Cafe at Paseo de Peralta, 8:39 to be specific, Madonna's, Buddha's. That's a watercolor pencil work by Mark Fosser. The show runs through January. I don't believe there's a reception. I like that they put the Madonna's and then there's Buddha's because they don't want you to think it's the pop star. I took a friend of mine to the Metropolitan Museum of Modern Art in New York.
Metropolitan Museum of Art or the Museum of Modern Art?
It was one of those places. We staggered in one evening. It was a reception. A little bit of wine was there. It was flowing freely. And come to think of it, so was I. And there was an image of the Madonna on the wall.
You were flowing freely?
It was one of those, those Raphael-type prints from the medieval era when, you know, the Renaissance.
Raphael was Renaissance.
Well, it was that guy then. Well, anyway, one of him or one of his colleagues was painted a picture of Madonna. You think, I don't know anything about art. This friend of mine said, that doesn't look like anything like Madonna. She was thinking it was Madonna, the pop star. And I was...
Oh, boy. You got some winners there. The Santa Fe School of Cooking is offering farm, fresh, and local cooking classes and supporting New Mexican local farmers and New Mexican food and stuff like that. And if you would like to know more information, you can go to SantaFeSchoolOfCooking.com or give them a call at 216-0889. That's right here in Santa Fe.
That's pretty good. Now, let's say that it's Saturday at noon. You don't know what to do. You feel like you want to hear some Bach and Piazzolla and some other guys that are classical musicians because you're in the mood for that sort of thing. Well, do I have news for you? The Serenata of Santa Fe is presenting the First Presbyterian Church Recital Series. It's chamber music group, and they're going to be performing by requested donation, I can say that, right?
Yes.
Meaning get off cheap if you're a cheapskate. At noon Saturday at the Presbyterian Church, 208 Grant Avenue, downtown. Remember that great song by Petula Clark? Downtown. Da-na-na-na. Oh, that's a great song.
Things will be great when you're...
No. It goes like this.
Yes, it does.
When you're alone and feeling sad and alone.
And life is making you lonely. I can't believe I know the
can go.
Words to this.
Downtown.
Horrible song.
Because you can find somebody kind to help and understand you. Someone who's a lot like you to lead a gentle
hand. Lend a gentle hand.
To guide you along. That's
okay. Now you've ruined my day because that damn song's going to be going through my head for the rest of the day. If not
That's
tomorrow.
That's my fault?
Yes, because you sang it.
She tells everybody, 8,000 listeners, that I'm going to ruin her day. This is a terrific way to the new year.
It's also true. No, it's good.
Serenata.
It's good. Because you sing it so well. You sing it better than I would sing it.
I wish they could see your face when you say these things to me. I mentioned, like, tonight, for example, there's the most haunted show. And my face, like, embarrassed me. 8 o'clock, by the way. They always go looking for ghosts. That's terrific. Open poetry night. You got 3 minutes to do your stuff. When? Monday. What time? 7 o'clock. Where? P.D. Bean. 2411 Sotillos Road. No charge. You got to sign up at 6:30. So 3 minutes. If you had 3 minutes to do some poetry, what would you do?
Oh, the sad truth is I would probably recite limericks because that's the only kind of poetry that I know how to write.
Well, it's a three-minute time limit. That doesn't mean you couldn't just do 80 seconds and get off the stage, right?
That's so true.
That'd be pretty good. Maybe I'll show up there and do some poetry.
That would be great, Robert.
Yeah, once was a
girl. If you're going to do that,
tuck it.
That's a limerick. That's not poetry. It's the lowest form of verse.
Well, At least it rhymes. Wednesday, there's a free screenwriting workshop with Rick Reichman, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Santa Fe Public Library in the Oliver Lafarge branch, 1730 Llano Street, 984-2927, no charge. 90 minutes to give you a little intro to how to write film scenes. Meanwhile, that same night, Douglas Schwartz is going to do a lecture. Santa Fe, a biography of an artistic community. Now, that's probably going to be pretty interesting. I don't know if it's a full, sweeping, historical saga in the scope of, say, a Cecil B. DeMille film, or more of a quiet little introspective piece, something like John Sayles would do. But nonetheless, Douglas Schwartz, the School of Advanced Research, will be speaking as part of their boardroom series, lecture series. It's in 660 Garcia Street, not far from Garcia Street Books, by the way. No charge. It doesn't tell me what time, and it's in the Pasta Tempo calendar. Bad, bad, bad. We messed up. That includes me. I should have caught that. I will give you a phone number, though, to find out. 954-7230. These things do happen, and sometimes, frankly, they are our fault. That same day, one more thing, and then you can chat. The Santa Fe Council on Foreign Relations, that's trying to, you know, help out Americans who've married really hot European women, how to make them communicate better. Oh, no, it's not. This is the Santa Fe Council on Foreign Relations.
What on earth are you talking about?
A lecture by former U.S. Foreign Service officer and current New Mexican Foreign Affairs columnist Bill Stewart, whose column I love to read in the New Mexican every Sunday, at 11:30 on Wednesday at the Hilton of Santa Fe, downtown Sandoval Street. You got to pay to get in. Call 982-4931. This guy's pretty knowledgeable about what's happening overseas, and if you're interested and you care, I think it's going to be a terrific talk. 11:30 Monday.
He's very good.
He is good, and the ticket's available online at www.santafecouncil.org, and you can get a student discount if you are a student. Go ahead. You were about to say something.
Well, I was going to say that Small Dog Rescue will have an adoption day tomorrow at Zoe and Guido's from noon until 3 o'clock, and there's lots of cute dogs, including a white poodle, a tiny wire-haired terrier, a poodle-chihuahua mix, which is called a poochie, and others. And Zoe and Guido's is on Cerrillos Road. I'm not sure exactly what the address
is. It's the corner of Paseo de Peralta, right across from Santa Fe Hot Dog, Chicago Dog.
That's right, near the Hotel Santa Fe.
Yeah. That's a great title, isn't it? I'm Zoe. I'm Guido. Come on over and adopt some dogs. Yeah, we want you to. That'd be terrific. No offense meant to Zoe and Guido. I never met them, and I hope they don't get offended at my slight humor there. If you want to do ballroom and Latin dancing, and you keep saying
to
yourself...
And who doesn't?
And you keep saying to yourself, gee, I'd like to start doing that, but I got two left feet, not to mention three green thumbs. Go over to the dance station at 901 West Alameda Street in the Solana Center at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday. They will give you lessons, and then you get to dance to DJ music. I'm not sure which DJ. You do have to pay for all this, but it ain't bad. Here's a phone number, 989-9788. You go to those things sometimes, yes?
I do. I do salsa.
But you don't do the lessons, do you?
I haven't for some time.
I see. So you're a little bit off kilter there, huh?
Hey, the Christmas tree recycling program is January 7th through January 11th. The City of Santa Fe residents can recycle their Christmas trees. You just put your tree on the curb for pickup next to your garbage can on your regular garbage collection day. And the tree stands and decorations and all those things should be removed from the trees, and they will pick up the trees and turn it into mulch, and that's free for all city residents.
That's true. That starts Monday, you said. Also, if you noticed in the paper yesterday, I believe that the recycling program the city has will start...
Yeah, in the middle of this month, they're going to pick up every week instead of every two weeks.
In about 2 more weeks they start, which is great, because there's nothing worse than your recyclable day is Tuesday, and then Christmas falls on Tuesday, and then New Year's falls on Tuesday. So, like, and...
Yeah, but they pick up on holidays, because the last time Christmas was on a Monday, I put my garbage out just in case, and they picked it up.
Well, I don't know if that's true in every neighborhood. All I know is I drink like a fish over the holidays, and I don't want people to know that. So I feel really bad when my bins are overfilled with, like, Michelob bottles.
But that wasn't you. That was your friends who came over.
It was?
Yeah, that's it. Oh. You can have people think.
Oh, you're good. I should hire you as my agent.
Mm.
Okay, what were we talking about? Anything good?
Speaking of the arts.
I thought as much. Let's say you want to go out of town. Not too far. Let's say you want to go to Los Alamos.
Let's say what you do.
7:30 p.m. on Tuesday, January 8th. The Los Alamos Historical Society presents Albuquerque from Railroad Road Depot to Crossroads of New Mexico. It's a lecture by David Kammer, K-A-M-M-E-R. Followed by light refreshments. It's at 7:30 p.m. Tuesday in the Pajarito Room up there at the Arts Center at Fuller Lodge, right on Central Avenue. It ain't hard to find. Here's a phone number, 662-9331. And you can go over there and have dinner at the Hilltop Diner. I love going to that place. The Bradbury Science Museum's up there. If you've never been there, it's most interesting. A lot of exhibits up at the Los Alamos National Lab. And the Los Alamos Historical Museum's up there on Juniper Street. And they talk a lot about the Manhattan Project, the Branch School for Boys, and Jemez Volcano. So Los Alamos could be an interesting place to go if you want to hit some museums, get some dinner. They also have a little theater up there doing a play, I think, starting this weekend. And it's escaping me, but I'll think it out. I'll figure it out in a minute. Maybe it's opening next weekend. Meanwhile, the City of Las Vegas Museum out in Las Vegas, it has a Rough Rider Memorial Collection. If you ever want to drive out there, they're on Grand Avenue. You could go up to Española to the Bond House, which is a nice little museum. I've been there at 706 Bond Street. Historical and cultural pieces from the home of railroad entrepreneur Frank Bond, who was around here in the 1800s and the 1900s. And in Taos, you got the Taos Art Museum. You got the Taos Center for the Arts. You got the Millicent Rogers Museum. You got La Hacienda de los Martinez, which is a great historical house that was built in like 1804. So already it's like 200 years old, right?
Yes, that would be correct.
I see, plus three or four. And you've got the Harwood Museum. There's a lot of stuff happening up there. So you've got lots of options, and you can go to the Positampo calendar and find all this stuff out. You can get everything you need, from places to dates to addresses to times to phone numbers to admission costs, although sometimes maybe that stuff changes and we don't know about it. What time is it?
8:55.
Okay, we're doing pretty good.
What'd you do New Year's week? New Year's Eve, New Year's weekend.
New Year's Eve was on what day?
Tuesday. Well, no, Monday.
Wasn't I on the show that morning?
Yeah, that's right.
I was supposed to go by work, but I stopped off to see a friend of mine over at one of the bars downtown. They were open a little early. And then when I woke up, it was about 2 hours ago.
Is that a work?
Yeah, no, I'm just joking. I wouldn't do such a thing. I think I was like...
No, you're good. You only have 5.5 of the 7 deadly sins.
Oh, that's going to get thrown in my face. This is what happens when men tell women everything. Suddenly, well, remember the time you... It's bad enough.
I don't do that.
Some friend's house last night, we were discussing how silverware is missing from the table. Quite often you find your silverware missing. And one of them had the temerity to suggest that it's because I come over to their house. What would I do with mixed and matched silverware from other people's houses?
I can't even begin to imagine.
Yeah, I wonder why you never invite me into your kitchen. There's movies. Go see them. Juno is a nice little picture. I like it very much. Southland Tales.
That was at the film festival.
Yeah. Bizarre movie, Southland Tales. I liked it. I don't know if other people will. There's a great French noir over at the screen. You got to go see it. I think it's called Les Doulos. How do you pronounce that? You're the French expert.
I don't speak French.
I see you.
Doulos. I don't know.
Les Doulos. It's terrific. Jean-Paul Belmondo, and it's a terrific little noir. Go see it. Before the Devil Knows You're Dead is still over at CCA. The Great Debaters I saw the other night. It's okay. It's at Regal if you want to see it.
Oh, I heard that was good.
It's decent. I think it's a little hackneyed, but the acting is
excellent. It's about the first black debate team in the United States.
They were in Texas, and they took on Harvard, according to the movie. Very well directed by Denzel Washington. And then The Water Horse, about the little Loch Ness creature that's found by a family in the 20s, and they take care of it. It's like E.T., only set in water.
I can't believe that. We couldn't even get through the first week of the new year without you talking about the Loch Ness Monster.
What are you talking about? It's not my fault there's a movie down at the cinema at the Regal. I don't make these. I don't construct. What do you call it when somebody schedules programming? I'm not like the curator.
That's true. You're not the curator. Robert Knott, no. You are associate editor of the Positempo, Friday Arts Supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and you're here with us every Friday speaking of the arts, and it's just about time to go.
Pick up the posits.
Did you make
issue.
Up any New Year's resolutions?
Yes, I decided I'm going to keep coming on the show despite the repeated insults hurled at me.
What did I hurl at you? You were the one who did a tally of your own deadly sins.
It's
did you hear me doing it?
No, but you couldn't even name the seventh dwarf, so there. One more time, fast. Sleepy, happy, bashful, doc. Dopey. Sneezy.
Sneezy.
That's only six.
If you were one of the seven dwarfs, which one would you be?
I'd like to be happy. But I'm a little bashful. And some would say I'm dopey. Oh, grumpy. We got them all. Real fast. Grumpy, sneezy. All right, start with the two that don't have Y. Doc and...
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte.
I got to get a pad and paper.
Robert Knott is with us here every Friday, just about every Friday, speaking of the arts.
Get my hands on the
He's the associate editor of the Positempo Friday Arts Supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. And it's delightful to have you, and I wish you a very happy new year. But so your resolution is just simply to come... That's so cool that your resolution involves me.
It does?
Well, yes. You said your resolution was to come here on the show every
Friday.
Well,
as long as you keep inviting me.
I invite you.
I keep waiting to get my pink slip, which I look very good in, by the way, especially when I ain't wearing nothing else.
When you're wearing a pink slip?
Yeah, absolutely.
KSFR streams live on the web at KSFR.org. You can email me at radiocafe@KSFR.org or leave a message at 428-1528.
I'll call you right now.
We're also, go ahead, make my day. We're also podcasting at SantaFeRadioCafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want to, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Now, this show broadcasts 5 days a week from the Santa Fe Baking Company from about 8 to 9, really about 8:06 until 9. And some people think it's only on Fridays because they just tune in to hear you.
And some people tune out on Fridays.
That's true. Some people do.
But how dare you ruin that woman's reputation? She's an esteemed journalist, and you just esteem her up.
Who?
Oh, you know, there's always somebody, what do you call it, when they harangue you.
What on earth are you talking about?
That's another thing to talk about. I'll see you next Friday. Can I come back?
Yes. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering
today. Thank you, Laurel.
Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, Jazz a la Carta.
I love that show. That guy makes me dance all the way out of here.
Really?
Yes.
That's great. We'd love to see you dance. We'll see you at one of the Latin dance events, or we'll see you sometime, Robert Naughton. We'll certainly see you next week at about 8:30.
God willing.
God willing. Hasta la vista. Be happy. Be peaceful. Bye.
Adios.